Robin.
Hey, Lana. Are you ready for this episode? It's another one of those simple questions that's actually huge.
Sensing a bit of a pattern here.
Yeah, you mean the one where I think it's a pretty easy question and you come in and tell me it's way more complex?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay, yeah, well.
So let's introduce ourselves and we can get right into it.
Okay. I'm Robin Matthews, Jewish Learning Ventures graphic designer and the director of PJ Arway Engagement and JKid Pride.
And I'm Jewish Learning Ventures CEO, Ilana Ravel. And we are the hosts of More Than Four, a blogcast that answers some of the questions people have about Judaism. And today we are answering the question, what is a B'nai Mitzvah?
Do you mean a bar mitzvah?
No.
Are you sure?
I am. That's okay. Just one of the ways we name this ritual.
There's more than one way to say bar mitzvah?
More than four, actually.
Oh. So today's episode answers the question, what is a B'nai Mitzvah? And we have our own resident expert, director of JKid Philly, Lisa Lippman.
Lisa, tell our listeners what makes you an expert on this subject.
Yes, and then tell us why we keep calling it a B'nai Mitzvah.
Oh, I'll do all of those things.
Oh, good.
Well, I'm an expert because I'm old.
Sure.
And because I've been in Jewish education for a long time, and I'm also a B'nai Mitzvah tutor. Now, a bar mitzvah is what we're used to hearing most, and it is an ancient language, Aramaic, which means son of the mitzvah. A mitzvah meaning commandment or good things to do.
So mitzvah is Hebrew.
Mitzvah is Hebrew.
Bar, son of, is Aramaic. Okay.
Right. But then we also know bat mitzvah, which is daughter of. And, you know, that came around a little bit later. Let's face it, like, the men were always first, boys were always first. But it was a coming-of-age ceremony. And it started a very long time ago, like in the year 500. Mm-hmm. The year 500.
So that's super gendered, though, huh? Hebrew and Aramaic, I guess.
Yes.
Are super gendered languages.
And they are. So we increased it to bat mitzvah, but now there's so much more B'nai mitzvah.
So I have a twin brother, and we had a B'nai mitzvah.
Uh-huh.
Oh, because right? B'nai is plural.
Because B'nai is plural, and we did it together.
Is B'nai the plural masculine? Is that also gendered? Is B'nai gendered?
Ooh, I guess it is.
Yeah.
Because there's really...
What would be two bat mitzvahs? Would it be benot?
Bats mitzvah.
Yes, it would be benot, right? Yes, it would be
benot. So we're still, even though I feel like we've heard B'nai Mitzvah as a gender neutral term, it actually is still gendered, right?
Yes, but I think it does reflect the non-binary aspect.
Sure.
But now there are so many different ways of saying, you know, coming of age ceremonies. So there's Zera mitzvah, which is the seed of a mitzvah.
I've never heard that, have you?
Yeah, that's kind of a new one. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it is.
And
cool.
Of course, there's B mitzvah, where you don't want to say either way. Mm-hmm. There's Simchat mitzvah, which is the joy of doing the mitzvah.
I like that one.
I like that one too. Yeah. So what is the actual mitzvah? Like, what are we doing here?
So this is, like I said, coming of age, and it means you are really the age where you're going to take on the yoke of adult responsibility.
So at 13 years old.
Joyous because we're taking on the yoke of responsibility.
That's right. That's right.
Seems like a little bit of tension.
And usually on that one day, they do seem very adult, but then don't worry because the very next day they go back to being
the very next day. Later that day. My son was just bar mitzvahed last year, so it's very fresh in my mind.
Do we know where the whole age thing came into play? Like, why 13? And
according to the oral tradition, age 13 for a young man is the age of maturity. It's the age of responsibility. And for women, it would be around age 12. But you have to remember that back in the day, at age 13, you really did have some serious responsibilities.
Right. There's a lot of joking about, you're 13, you're an adult now, which is so far from the truth, right?
Yes, exactly.
So what are they doing? Like, what makes it?
So in a traditional bar or bat mitzvah, B'nai mitzvah, simchat bat, that's also one. You lead some prayers. You might learn some part of the Torah. You might also read from the Haftorah, which is a reading from the prophets. You might give a drasha, which is a little speech, a little something that explains the Torah. And some people also would just learn something about being Jewish. It doesn't necessarily have to be a traditional synagogue service. There can also just be a ceremony of your own making. And a lot of people do a project that's like a social action kind of project or a mitzvah project. And when we talk about that mitzvah, it's really about helping others and doing good deeds.
Mm. Isn't it also, you don't have to do anything.
I was just going to say, like...
And you can still be considered.
Happens, right?
That's right. It sort of happens to you when you turn the age, because now these ritualistic expectations, right? Because what happens is you become bar bar mitzvah, b'nai mitzvah,
b'mitzvah, mitzvah,
right? and now within the congregational life or within ritual life, you are taking on those responsibilities. You can count for a minyan, right, for the prayer.
Because there's things you can't do when you're not an adult, right? Like you can't read from the Torah before you're 13.
You can.
Well,
you can't recite the blessings.
Right.
You can't have an aliyah.
Right. But right.
Can you carry the Torah before you're 13?
Well, that depends on your community.
Yeah. So because I know this year at Simchat Torah, this is the first time my son was allowed to carry it around. Yeah.
But you're not supposed to fast on Yom Kippur if you're not of age.
Well, you're not required to.
Right.
So this idea of a ritual ceremony goes back centuries. And even for women in ancient Roman times, there was a coming of age ceremony. It wasn't called a bat mitzvah, but there was for Jewish women a coming of age ceremony.
So were girls allowed to read from the Torah or say blessings?
No. Oh, my goodness.
So that's new.
No, that's
how recent?
Well, it was Mordechai Kaplan, who was a Reconstructionist rabbi who wanted to have a bat mitzvah for his daughter, and he thought it wasn't fair. And that was quite some time ago.
It was in the 1980s.
Like, just the 80s?
I think so. So I mentioned
Well,
earlier.
His daughter Judith became a bat mitzvah in 1922.
Oh,
but it
okay.
really didn't become popular. Because
so my bat mitzvah was 1984, my b'nai mitzvah with my twin brother.
Right.
I was the first girl to wear a kippah and a talit on the bima.
Wow.
In my synagogue.
Which was a traditional conservative affiliated congregation. I was not allowed to read Torah, and the only reason I could stand there for the blessings was because it was my brother.
For your brother.
Wow.
So he did the blessing and chanted Torah. I was able to do the blessings and the Haftorah, but not for the Torah.
And I grew up in like an ultra reform congregation, and girls were definitely being bat mitzvah. Right. My bat mitzvah was in 1987, but even earlier, like when my brother had his, girls were doing it also, and they were reading from the Torah. So I think it depends on also where you were, right?
Yeah.
I did not have a traditional bat mitzvah. Mine was on a Friday evening in our synagogue. It was on a Friday evening. I was the first and only girl who was allowed to have one by herself. And lead a lot of the prayers. And I read Haftorah, but I wasn't allowed to say blessings.
What's Haftorah?
Haftorah are readings from the prophets. And they come from a time when we were not allowed to publicly read Torah. So we found something that was in the prophets that related to what we thought was in the Torah portion. And we would read that.
So at a sort of traditional b'nai mitzvah now, you would read from the Torah and also from the Haftorah.
Yes, if you were able.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are many ceremonies now for children who might have reading challenges or inability to learn Hebrew. And there are also ways to include them in having a ceremony that might not have either of those
things. So there's a lot of flexibility in how you celebrate this ritual. Then it doesn't have to be in a synagogue. It doesn't. And Alana, you were saying it just happens to you. So even if you do nothing, you're still considered.
That's right. You're still considered of age. Mm-hmm. Again, it's the communal recognition and the ritual, right? We're so much a religion of ritual and tradition, and so there's that piece of it. Certainly, the party is a whole other.
I was just going to say, so many of my friends who were not Jewish at the time of my bat mitzvah were like, just thought it was a big party, right? Yeah. And they came and they were like, "What's all this?" before the party.
Right.
But yeah, so there's usually a big party or can be a big party.
There can be. I remember when my oldest daughter became b'nai mitzvah, I created her invitations and we went to the store and the woman asked who was doing my calligraphy. And I said, well, I'm just going to put labels on it. She was, labels, that's horrible. And then she said, oh, are you one of those people who thinks the ceremony is more important than the party? I was one of those people. So
that's did you really put labels on your
Yes, they were clear.
did the same thing.
I totally didn't. No.
Our joke was about the theme, which has become a thing. Oh, right? Wow. We have to have a theme. And my kids would say, what's the theme? And I said, bar mitzvah. Or you, right? You're the theme.
You're the theme.
You're the theme. Yeah.
Just like there's so many ways to celebrate it, right? Yes. There's so many ways to party. Like, I know that there are plenty of kids who don't want a big...
That's right.
I mean, the traditional bar mitzvah party is a DJ or a band and dancing and a dinner and a whole thing.
Oh, my goodness.
That was what I had. That's what my brother had. That is not what my kid had.
Right.
No.
Does
and
it matter?
Sometimes the party is geared towards the family, like a celebratory meal. That's very popular in many traditional families. And sometimes it's just for the child and maybe a few adults are there. It definitely should be a family choice there.
Yeah.
And you don't have to have a party at all, right?
Right.
What, like you said, it's really about what works for the family and a way to mark the time.
Families will do like a trip to, some people go to Israel as a family. Yeah. Or...
My parents took my kids on a trip for their B'nai Mitzvah, like as the gift, right? Which is also
so
like a nice tradition. They did it with all of their grandchildren,
that
sort of post-B'nai Mitzvah.
I remember my parents saying to me, my brother had to go to Hebrew school. I did not. I mean, I went, they started me in kindergarten and I was like, I hate this. And they were like, all right, cool. And I never had to go. And my brother went and he had his bar mitzvah. And they said to me when I was like 12, 11 and a half, you can have a bat mitzvah or you can just have a party for your birthday. You can choose. And I chose a bat mitzvah, which then meant I had to be tutored and get me the whole thing. And I was tutored by the rabbi's son for a long time. But it was. I think it's because I was a girl, which is fine. You know, I grew up in a pretty feminist family.
Right.
But they were like, yeah, you know, what else? I mean, my mother didn't have one at that time.
Right. And... Robin, tell us about your mom choosing to have a bat mitzvah.
You know, it's funny. I think I've mentioned before that I, you know, wasn't super religious, super traditional growing up. I've become much more invested in Judaism, much more involved as I've gotten older. And I haven't really talked to her about it since then, like with more understanding, because I was probably in my early 20s when she did it. But I think she was like in, you know, they were a very big part of our congregation as empty nesters, really. And she... and a bunch of friends started talking and they were like, you know, I never did it. And they all decided that they wanted to. And there were, I don't know, maybe 10 of them, 8 of them. Mm-hmm. And the rabbi was like, cool, let's make it happen. And they had a joint ceremony and a joint like luncheon afterwards. And it was really, really nice.
Yeah. Not so unpopular, right? In congregations to offer that for women and some men, but more often women who didn't, because of the time, you know, have their own.
Also like the second bar bat mitzvah or b'nai mitzvah.
Are they doing that? Will you do it again?
Yes, when you become 83, because a life is 70 years, according to ancient Jewish tradition. And so when you turn 83,
you're 13 again. Look at that.
Yes.
Interesting. I never heard of that. That's kind of cool. I wonder if my mother would do it again. And it's really interesting, the age, too. Like, when you think about... you know, we have all had young teenagers at this point, and they're doing this really personal thing, right? And this not totally usual thing, like not everyone has a bunch of Jewish friends at 13.
Right.
And they're doing this pretty publicly in front of their friends, like all their friends, pretty much. And I think that can be, some kids love that and some kids don't.
Yeah.
But that's an interesting thing to think about, that it's like, I'm going to share this very sort of personal part of my family and tradition with... at 13 years old, when you're like the most aware of your peers and what your peers are doing and wanting to be just like your peers.
So about 25 years ago, when Birthright Israel had just started, I was working at Penn State Hillel, and we were sending a delegation of students on Birthright Israel.
And Birthright is a
it's a free trip to Israel for 18 to 26 year olds. Mm-hmm. So we had to interview everybody who applied because we had a limited number of spots. And one of the questions we asked was, tell us about one of your strongest Jewish memories. Mm-hmm. And I would say 90% of them talk about their bar bat mitzvah, kind of like what you're talking about, the idea, you know, of being up in public and speaking, because most people, as you mentioned, Lisa, right, are giving some sort of learning or Dvar Torah or Drash, right, for others to learn. And they have to sing, potentially, and maybe they can't sing or they love to sing, right? And the experience of being in front of the community is meaningful for so many people, that was the number one thing that people talked about.
And Lisa, when you mentioned, like, kids sort of acting an adult that day. I feel like that does sort of elevate,
yeah,
at especially at that age, which is such a, you know.
Well, you were talking about that age and sharing so much of who you are and being vulnerable, and I love the tradition of having a tallit. You wear it for mm-hmm. the first time when you become B'nai Mitzvah, and a lot of kids now are choosing something that's meaningful for them for the mm-hmm. tallit. Often mm-hmm. you start the service with something that was passed down from a grandparent, but then your tallit becomes very much associated with who you are and the design, the color, what's on it, how you feel, the size of it. It's another personal expression of the way you think about who you are.
I obviously knew what a B'nai Mitzvah was coming into this, right? Like, I mean, but I learned a lot more, so that's kind of cool. Let's just tell our listeners all the ways they can send in their questions. There's actually four ways.
Only four?
No, we're not going there again.
All right. If you have a question about Judaism and no question is too big or too small, let us know. Send us an email at morethan4, using the number 4, at jewishlearningventure.org. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/jlearnventure, or reply in a comment wherever you found this podcast linked, Instagram, TikTok, or Facebook.
All right. Well, until the next episode.
See ya.
See ya.